Now, I appreciate Donald's taking my place while I was gone, and I understand he's done quite a good job, and you have reviewed the events of the Exodus and the wandering in the wilderness. Now, after we finish this month, we have another month, and during that month, I will be here, and I'm going to plan to finish this in style. I believe that we'll be able to finish it in good style and everything. But I really appreciate his taking my place. So today, what I want to do with you is I want to review the events of the period following the wandering in the wilderness. Now, what is that period? That's the invasion conquest. Okay, so what do I need to do here? Just... Oh, wow. Isn't that good? I may do that again here in a minute. All right, now, this map shows you the map of the land of Canaan as it was settled by the Israelites. And it already has the tribal portions on it. And of course, when Israel came into that land, it wasn't divided, you know. So that had to be done after Israel got in there. But this, the land form is still the same. But this is showing the tribes. So by now, you should know the basic curving coastline of Palestine and the Sea of Galilee up there in the north and the Dead Sea down in the south and so on. So before we get going any further into this, I want to remind you of something, and that is when the children of Israel had wandered in the wilderness for 40 years, the wandering in the wilderness came to an end as they were traveling up. What was the last things that they were doing in the wandering in the wilderness? What were some of the last things they were doing, say, while they were still on the east side? What were they doing? All right. Now that's right. Now, before Moses did that, what were the children of Israel doing as they went up that east side? They were conquering. Remember, they were conquering the nations on the east side, so they did that. And then they encamped there right across from Jericho. Now, let's see. Where is the laser pointer on that? Yeah, okay. All right, see, isn't that great? All right, so right here across from Jericho, and that's where Moses preached to them. And so, Steve, that was right. You had that right. Then they crossed the Jordan. Now, once they crossed the Jordan, they encamped at Gilgal. And do you remember the events that occurred right there at Gilgal? What were the things they did at Gilgal once they crossed the Jordan? All right. That's right. They erected the monument of stones, the stack of stones, to remind them about the Lord dividing the waters of the Jordan. Okay, what else did they do at Gilgal? The circumcision of those that were not circumcised in the wilderness. Something else. What else? Yeah, the Passover. All right. The Passover. And this was the 41st Passover since the original one. And so what about what did they eat? Well, of course, in the Passover, they ate the lamb. But otherwise, where did their food come from? Do you remember? They started eating from the land, and then what happened to the manna? It stopped. Never came again. So those events marked the actual end of the wandering in the wilderness, because it was a matter of reproach for them that they had to wander in the wilderness in the first place. And it was a matter of reproach that they had not circumcised the children. Now, there would have been no reason why they couldn't do that since the babies were circumcised at 8 days old. So, you know, I mean, they couldn't walk anyhow. Wouldn't be any deal with them. And the very fact that the meaning of Gilgal is a rolling, and the point is made that God rolled away the reproach of Israel at that time when they circumcised these children, I believe that the implication is that God had not let them do that because of a sign of his disfavor with them. So that this event of the circumcision of all the children that had been born during that time, and then the observance of the Passover, the eating of the food of the land, the cessation of the manna, and all of that, those were the very significant events that marked the end of the wandering in the wilderness. So this meant that they faced this land, and remember that Canaan is only the land on the left side. Canaan never included the whole land. Canaan is always just the land on the left. Okay? On the left side of the Jordan, on the west side of the Jordan, that is Canaan. So, though they had conquered the east side, they had not yet entered into the land that God had promised, which was Canaan. Until now, they've crossed the river. And so, I want you to get a good look at this map, and I've got a good many maps, and I want to show you these maps here as we go along now. Now then, will that advance? Oh, okay. All right, now that middle section, do you see how I have blown that middle section up there? Now, you can notice that on the right near the Jordan River, well, I'll use my trusty laser pointer, Gilgal. All right, see right there? All right, and there is Jericho. So you can see there, right there, just north of the Dead Sea. So this land over there where you see Ephraim and everything, that is in the center part of the land. Now then, what they do is they take Jericho. I'm not standing in anybody's way. Can you see it all right? Huh? Okay, I want everybody to be able to see it as much as possible. So they take Jericho, and then they take Bethel, and they take Ai in battle. And then they go up to Shechem, and they read the blessings and the curses of the law. They set up these great stones and whitewash those stones, and they write on them the law, the words of the law. Now, look at that and tell me, where is all that action taking place? In the central part of the land. Do you see that? So, guess what we cleverly call this? The central campaign. All right? The central campaign. All right, now then, some of you know what the next one is, but if you didn't, you'd say, well, I'll dare say the next one's going to be either the northern one or the southern one, and you would be right about that. So let's see what happens now. All right, coming back out to a wider map, see, there's the central part. Everybody see that? All right, so this is the central campaign. All right, now then, we have moved south a little bit. And we have blown it up a little bit. You see Gibeon? Now the Gibeonites were from within the land, and they were on on the edge of that central part. But the cities that pertained to Gibeon and that considered themselves kind of like allies of Gibeon would be from their south. So the Gibeonites, being a city of the land, decided that the only chance they had to live at all was to make a deal with Israel. But they also knew that they would not be able to make a deal with Israel if the Israelites learned they were from within the land. So does anyone know what clever stratagem the Gibeonites came up with to deal with that? Mm-hmm. That's right. Pretending that they were from a very faraway city that took them so long to get there that the bread had become moldy, the wineskins had become stiff and hard, and all their stuff had gotten worn. And so they made a deal with the Israelites. And when the Israelites found out they had been deceived, they made the Gibeonites hewers of wood and haulers of water. And these Gibeonites became servants of the temple, the tabernacle, later on the temple, to provide the wood. An enormous amount of wood had to be used. You know, if you think about it, an enormous amount of wood had to be used there in the temple in connection with the daily sacrifices and all of the other sacrifices and water. So it was a big job. But they became regarded as respected members of Israelite society. That's interesting how that came about. But at this point, there are other kings now, like the king of Jerusalem there. He decides he's going to kind of gather his forces together to fight Israel. So he goes ahead and gathers up the king of Hebron and Jarmuth and Lachish and other cities. But now notice, where are they? Where are they? This is in the south. This is in the south. So there's the big arrow showing the south. So this is the southern campaign, where they go and fight these kings, and Joshua takes his forces and goes down and fights all these kings. Now, have you ever heard of the Battle of the Long Day? You ever heard of that? Well, that happened in connection with this campaign. It was in the Valley of Ajalon. And as you're going from Jerusalem down to the coast, you drive through Ajalon. And it looks like just a little valley. In other words, all these places, when you go through it, you'd say, well, it looks like a valley. Well, that's what it is. It looks like hundreds of valleys that you've seen at other places. Because what happened to me again and again, I think I kept expecting to see a glow. I kept thinking I was going to see a glow, and there was no glow nowhere. But it was exciting to be there. And I said to our guide, I said, you know, I would love to see the Valley of Elah. He says, well, I can look at it out my bedroom window every day. Because his house is built where it overlooks the Vale of Elah, where David killed Goliath. See that? Isn't that amazing? To live there. So this is the central campaign. So now the southern campaign. So we have the northern campaign. Let's try it again. We have the central campaign and then the southern campaign. And now you can guess what the next one is going to be. Now you see, we've moved to the north. How do you immediately spot we've moved to the north? The Sea of Galilee. That's right. You see the Sea of Galilee up there. So the king of Hazor was the leader of the kings in the north, and he called kings from not only around Hazor, but well to the south there in that southern area of that portion that you see on the screen. So he gathered forces together. In fact, the Bible talks about them as the sand of the sea. So, you know, this was a very large and powerful force. And so Joshua took his army up there, and they thoroughly defeated those kings in the north. They just wiped them out. And they didn't burn all the cities, by all means, because one of the points was you're going to live in cities which you didn't build and houses you didn't build and all that. So they didn't burn all the cities by any means, but they did burn Hazor. Now, Hazor, you can see where it is there toward the north. Hazor would be one of the first cities to bear the brunt of an invasion that came from the north. And when we were approaching the city of Hazor, it's way up on a hill, which is called a tell. As they would build the cities up over centuries, the cities would get higher and higher. And so it was way up there on top of Hazor, on top of this hill. And as we were driving and approaching, we could look in the distance a pretty long way and see it. And way up there on the very highest point, they had what looked like a warrior standing up there. but it was just a cutout of bronze. It was just a cutout of bronze. It was an image, just cut out, a silhouette. Not, you know, it wasn't thick, but it was just a sheet of metal that was carved out in the shape of a warrior standing up there. But really was interesting to imagine, you know, if we were coming from the south, that guy would be able to see us a long time before we got there. And then to turn and look toward the north, I remember that when you look toward the north, coming down that valley, coming down this valley up here, as you come down toward Hazor, there's a kind of a ridge that comes out so that you couldn't see what was coming until they got around the foot of that ridge. When they came around the foot of that ridge and you were up there on Hazor on that watch tower, then you'd see what you're going to be dealing with. So it might be an Assyrian army or something like that. But you couldn't see that army until it came around the foot of that ridge. And I thought about what that would be like. Now, of course, in most cities like that, you would have people out who would come running and tell you. You know, they would be kind of catching on if there was the sound of an army with a half a million men. Now, when you think about an army of a half a million men, remember that when Sennacherib's army later in the days of Hezekiah, when God smote them, do you remember how many men God killed among them? 185,000. Well, if he killed 185,000, and that wasn't by any means all the army, then that shows you that he had a really, really big army. So that wouldn't have been anything unusual. But boy, imagine what it would be like if you were up there on that very high prominence and you look out there and around the end of that ridge, here comes the first units. And then they keep coming and keep coming and keep coming. Well, Hazor was a very strong city, covered about 200 acres. Jericho probably covered about 7 acres. So, you know, it's interesting to think of a 7-acre tract that you know of. Steve, do you know of a 7-acre tract that anybody, you know, that would be somewhere that people might know? Or Jimmy?
It's about
10 acres. Okay. In other words, the pasture over here? Right. All right. So Jericho would have been smaller. The whole city could have gone out here and you'd have had room to spare. Thank you. Yeah, you could have put Jericho out here and had room to spare. But Hazor, 200 acres. Now, Caesarea, 3,000 acres. See, so it was a much bigger city and everything. But Hazor was a strongly fortified city. And so, this being in the north, what shall we call this? That's right, the northern campaign. Now we have 3 campaigns in order, and I'll dare say that every one of you knows the order of them now. What is the first one? Central. Second one? Southern. The third one? Northern. Now that's easy, isn't it? And you know now what was going on. And so they defeated these kings and burned the city of Hazor and everything like that. So you have the central campaign, southern campaign, the northern campaign. And now comes the division of the land. Now, do you see how you can remember that just by logically thinking about it? What would you think they would do now that they have conquered the land? What have they been waiting to do? What have they come there to the land of Canaan to do? To receive their inheritance. So the next logical thing would be the division of the land. And that's exactly right. So they divide the land up, and there you have the tribes again. So you have, starting here in the south, you have Simeon, and then you have Judah. Simeon received his inheritance in the midst of the territory of Judah as a part of it. It was first given to Judah, and then Simeon's part was taken out of Judah and given to him. And you see you have 2 tribes here between Judah and Ephraim. Between these 2 very dominant tribes, you've got a kind of a belt here of Benjamin and Dan. Now, the Bible doesn't say that's why those tribes were put there, but it's a possibility. as these tribal territories were allotted, that they thought it best to separate Ephraim and Judah because they were kind of rivals somewhat. And so you have then Ephraim and Manasseh. And remember that Manasseh and Ephraim were both the sons of what man? Of whom? Of Joseph. Now since Joseph, see, think about this. If you had had Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, Asher, Joseph, and Benjamin receiving one portion each, Joseph would have gotten one portion. Do you all see that? But when Jacob was dealing with Joseph there at the close of his life, when he was kind of telling the sons what their inheritance would be, because of the service that Joseph had been to the family and because he actually received the gift of the firstborn, since Reuben had been discredited. And it's interesting, actually, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah, all four were discredited. Then it went to the firstborn of Rachel. So he got a double portion. But the way he got a double portion was that Jacob said, I'm going to take your sons, Manasseh and Ephraim, as if they were my sons instead of my grandsons. And they will inherit a portion equal to my other sons. So do you all see that? So that meant that he got a double portion. So these are referred to as the house of Joseph, Ephraim and Manasseh. And then on up here, you've got Issachar and Zebulun and Asher and Naphtali. And so those were the tribes here on the west side. Meanwhile, over here, you had the tribes Manasseh in the north, Gad in the middle, and Reuben in the south. And they had already been given their portion, but they had gone across with the other soldiers to help them conquer the land. So it was their obligation to go over and help the Israelites conquer the portion of the rest of the tribes, because that was the part that had been given to them by God in promise. And now that they have done that, it's time for the Transjordanic tribes to go home. Does that make sense? Is everybody following that? So their men of war can now go back home. So they go back home, and as they're going back over there, realize they're going to be separated by the River Jordan from the other tribes. Now, one of the things that I had read about and everything, I'd seen pictures of the Jordan, but the pictures that I had seen made the Jordan more than it really is. When you look at the river, it is just a creek. It's just a good-sized creek. It really is. It's just a good-sized creek. And so remember the point that I made to the group and to myself and to other people. When I got over there, I thought about the fact it's not the land that made Jesus special. It is Jesus that made the land special. And if he had been born anywhere else and had done his work anywhere else, wherever he did his work, that would have made that land holy, as it were. But nevertheless, the Jordan was not an obstacle that could just easily be crossed anywhere. It would be a kind of a geographical marker, a boundary. So those tribes over there on the eastern side were concerned that eventually, in some generations to come, the tribes over here might forget that they were actually related to each other. So over here, on the west side, they built this altar. They built this altar, and it was shaped, modeled after the altar of burnt offering associated with the tabernacle. Except that it was humongous. Well, the other tribes, when they heard what they had done, the other tribes gathered together under Phinehas. Now, the priest would go with Aaron, and then Eleazar, and then Phinehas. So Phinehas was the grandson of Aaron. So that just shows you, the time that has passed by. So they go out there and they confront these other tribes. And I mean, they come ready for war. They're not going to put up with this idolatry. They're not going to put up with this competition. And well, the other tribes explain, no, we have not. Look at the size of this thing. Look at how big this is. It's a monument. This is not built to be used. This is built to be a reminder that we over here, we're one with you. And if there's ever a dispute, what we would say is, look at the altar. Do you see it's an exact copy of the altar at the tabernacle? Well, that's because we're a part of you. And that monument was built there to remind us of that. So then that was okay. That was all right. And the other tribes appreciated that. Phinehas thought, okay, I get the point. And that's good. And we never read of any problem at all with that altar. And so later on, we don't even hear about that altar. But there was never a problem with it so far as idolatry or anything like that was concerned. So now notice, we have the central campaign, the southern campaign, the northern campaign, and the tribes, and the division of the land. And then, number five, the Transjordanic tribes go home. So see, that's five things. All right? Central campaign, southern campaign, northern campaign, the division of the land, and the Transjordanic tribes go home. That's pretty easy, isn't it? That's the book of Joshua. Not quite, but almost all the book. Now then, there are two speeches of Joshua to the people. Now look at these summaries, because this is it. In the first speech, Joshua says, be sure to destroy the idolaters from your midst. Why don't you turn in your Bibles now? Take a moment and turn in your Bibles. You know, go through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 there and notice what's going on. This won't take but a minute, but it'll be very important. So in 1, 2, 3, what's happening in 1, 2, and 3? Just tell me some of the things you're seeing as you turn those pages. Huh? Yes, Joshua takes leadership. All right, Rahab and the spies. Crossing of the Jordan. And the memorial stones and what? Yeah, okay. In five, what's happening? All right, that's where the events, you know, we talked about that mark the actual end of the wandering in the wilderness. The circumcision of the men, the first the Passover, the eating of the fruit of the land, and the cessation of the manna. Now in 6, what is there? That's Jericho. 7. All right. Look at 8. Now 7 is where they tried to take Ai. What about 8? That's right. And the latter part of 8, look at what the latter part of 8 is about. And what? Go on after Ai is destroyed, then what? Remember, in 8, look at the last part of 8. They are at Shechem. Remember, what are they doing? Now, Jim, you were talking about the Levites. Remember, they divided up the people on one side, one mountain, and so on. And this is the reading of the blessings and the cursings of the law. So that's 8. And now in 9, see, that was the central campaign. Now in 9, what's the city that you soon find mention of in 9? The Gibeonites. Here you have the Gibeonites. All right, look on over into 10. Over in 10. Now then, king of what do you see there? Look for kings of Jerusalem, Hebron, Jarmuth, Lachish. They do battle together. Now then, what? That's 9 and 10. This is the southern campaign. All right, now look in 11, 12. It's 12, isn't it? 11. All right, 11. This is Hazor. Right, the northern campaign. Okay, see, just like we were going there. All right, now then, what begins to happen from 12 on? A list of the kings that were conquered. And so then in 13, they begin the process of dividing the land. So you can see in 13 and 14 and 15 and 16 and 17 and 18. Now 18 is going to be sort of the odd tribes, that not the major tribes like Ephraim and Judah and so on. So these are going to be the tribes like Zebulun and Naphtali and things like that. And then in 21, look in 21, what does that concern? The Levites, the cities of refuge, the Levites, the cities of the priests. So see, that's still the division of the land, isn't it? So 13 through 21 is really the dividing of the land among the tribes, among all the tribes. Now as you see on the screen there, we come then to, 22 is the return of the tribes home. The Transjordanic tribes go home. Now look at 23 and 24. I want you to take a moment and look through 23 and see how Joshua is telling the people there that they must be sure and finish exterminating the idolaters. Do you all see that in 23? You see a particular verse, Jimmy, there that sets that idea forth? There are several verses you could read, but do you see one that you might could just read about the idolaters? Seven, 12. All right, read. Jim, you want to read 12?
Or else indeed if you go back and cling to the remnant of these nations, these that remain among you, and the marriages with them, and those cling to them, and leave to you.
All right. Did you say seven? All right, you want to read it? So there are, you see it's easy. I mean, all through the speech, you can see that the theme is don't leave these idolaters among you. So that the chapter is making the point that we have now subdued these cities and these forces to the point that they can't come out en masse and fight against you. Now, as you have your various portions given to you, you must get in there and make sure that you wipe out the rest of those idolaters, because if you don't, then these verses that we have read here would come true. Now in chapter 24, this is the one that is probably the most famous because it contains verses 14 and 15. Steve, would you read verses 14, and Steve Melton? Now, what I've tried to tell people, there's more to this passage than we first assume, the way it's been dealt with. We, you know, choose you this day whom you will serve, we have on our cross stitches. And yet, look there again, Steve, when he says, start out reading again, let me just stop you. All right, now hold it right there. Now, did you hear that part? Now, if it's disagreeable in your sight, to do what? To serve God. Then what choices do you have left? Now, go ahead. Okay, hold it now. Now, which of those two choices do you want? Which of those choices is good? Not a one of those. Not a one of those. So the part that's really important here is in verse 14, where he encourages them to serve the Lord. Serve the Lord. And then he points out to them that if you don't serve the Lord, then the only choice you've got left is idolatry, idols. And you'll have to choose which one of these worthless alternatives you're going to have. But then what did he say, Steve? But as for me. So he's going to do what he has recommended to them in verse 14 to do. But he wants them to understand that if they reject the Lord, what is left? Idolatry. And what you and I need to realize, and we need to help people realize today, that if you reject the Lord, there's nothing left worth shooting. There's nothing left. Absolutely nothing left. What? Yeah. You want to read it?
So the king answered and said, far be it from us that we should forsake the Lord to serve other gods.
That's right. And you know old Joshua here uses some reverse psychology, and he says, oh, no, I'm sorry, you're not going to be able to do that. You're not going to be able to do that because God is he's a jealous God, and he's not going to put up with all the dilly-dallying you're going to do, and I don't think you're going to be able to do that. So what the people say? Oh, yeah, we can. Yeah, we can. So what did Joshua have them to do? They made a covenant. Now, see, they already had that covenant back at Mount Sinai, but that was a previous generation. It is important that succeeding generations reaffirm the covenant that was made back there, like, yeah, they made it, but do I agree with that? Well, yes, because Joshua here leads the people to agree that, yes, they're going to follow that covenant. So, all right, I believe that's all of those now. So, in the book of Joshua, you can just divide it up like this. It's very, very simple. The central campaign, the southern campaign, the northern campaign, the division of the land, the return of the Transjordanic tribes, and then the two speeches of Joshua. Now, did I get that all in there right? All right, see if you can do it with me. All right, the central campaign, southern campaign, northern campaign, division of the land, the return of the Transjordanic tribes, and the two speeches of Joshua. Now, there you have it. And so you remember, in here we have studied famous stories like the crossing of the Jordan. We have studied the city of Jericho being taken. We see that the story of Bethel and Ai. Well, we didn't look at all the details there. But the reading of the law, the writing of the law, and the reading of the blessings and the cursings up at Shechem. And the battle of Ai Jalon. Remember that one that we mentioned, the battle of the long day, when the sun and the moon stood still? Most people have heard of that, at least if they know anything at all about the Bible. I've gotten to where I'm having to say that less and less, you know, to say most people. No, most people don't anymore. But I would like to think that most of you have heard of that battle of the long day. So these are in here. And then that most famous cross stitch. Now we know. Now, and do you all see, doesn't that make it interesting now? You go in a house, you see that cross stitch there, you can say, now, who said that? Who said those words? That was Joshua. And what was he doing? That was his second speech, wasn't it? And what was he trying to get the people to do? Serve the Lord. Be faithful. And realize that if you don't serve Him, then what is there left? Hey, Terrell hasn't gotten up yet, so I'll tell you what I want to do. I want to hear you all say the judges. I'll get you started. It starts with Oth. Othniel. That's great. That's great. why do we need to know the names of these judges? Just a list. And can you tell the consecutive stories if you don't know what they are? You know, what is the next consecutive story? So we need to know these. Okay, that's good. So Wednesday night we'll continue our work on this.